television studios of ESPN 700. Here's Bill Riley.
It appears that the squall is over. Good news. Road's still pretty treacherous, so be careful out there. We'll have some Utah football sound up on the website at ESPN700sports.com. Defensive coaches met with the media. James went up to get some of that stuff, so some defensive perspective should be up and available. Kyle Whittingham's up. I had him on the show a little bit earlier today, so you can go find that as well as spring football moves along up on the hill. The Jazz playing at the string of the regular season right now. Still, playoffs are still a possibility. It's a pretty tight West at the bottom for sure right now. They're in the 12th spot today, but a win tonight over Milwaukee could get them right back into the playoff picture again. It's basically number 8 all the way down to about number 12 where the Jazz are, separated by all of a half a game to a game. So anything can happen down the stretch. Jazz play Milwaukee tonight, then they go to Sacramento tomorrow. Not exactly an easy back-to-back. We'll see what happens. Eric Walden covers the Jazz, as you know, for the Salt Lake Tribune, and will be probably in attendance tonight if the roadways allow it to cover the Jazz and the Bucks tonight. What's up, Eric?
Hey, how's it going, Bill?
It's going well, So normally when your team sits in 12th place at this point in time of the year, you're like, they're playing out the string. We know that we're going to be done here in the next couple of weeks. That isn't the case for you guys, because the Jazz could still be a playoff team. All they got to do is win a couple of games, but the schedule isn't exactly easy down the stretch, is it?
No, it's definitely not in their favor, and yet this is a team that's proven to be nothing if not unpredictable. You know, it's like, I didn't think that they would be winning back-to-back games against the Celtics and Kings, over the last week or so. So, like, it just goes to show, like, anything's possible with this team, right? Like, especially when they follow that up by losing to an exceedingly depleted Portland team. So I wouldn't think they would make the postseason. I wouldn't think they'd make the play-in. But then again, this team just has this, infuriating habit of being competitive more nights than not. So, I'm not counting them out. Me and my fellow beat writers who cover the team on a daily basis have kind of been going back and forth about what we think the likelihood of them making the play-in is or not. I think I'm in the minority in saying I don't think it's going to happen, but that's where we're at with this team. Some nights they're looking like they can absolutely play with anybody in the league, and then other nights, like the one we had against the Blazers the other night, they absolutely resemble, the team that's supposed to be in the lottery competing for a high draft pick.
Well, take us inside the Eric, Andy, Sarah, Tony, Ryan conversation, the fellow beat writer conversation. Tell the listeners why you don't think they'll make it.
Yeah, I just think that, as you mentioned, the end of the season schedule is a pretty tough one. They are facing some quality teams. You know, Milwaukee has a lot to play for tonight. Sacramento has a lot to play for. They've got Denver on the schedule. They've got two games against the Lakers, who admittedly are not, awesome this season, but who are desperate to make the playoffs themselves. So it just seems to me like, with things being as tight as they are, as bunched up as they are, and the level of competition that they're going to face, I just think that all adds up to it being unlikely that they win enough of those to get into the top 10. If it happens, I'm not going to be shocked. I'm not going to be like, oh, man, I was so wrong about the team. Because, frankly, we've been so wrong about this team all season long, right? Like, I expected that they would be, competing for maybe a top 5 pick in the draft, not, competing for a playoff spot at this point in the season. But here we are, and I just tend to think that, as these last 10 games unfold, in my opinion, it's going to be difficult for them to win enough of them to make it happen. But I won't be shocked if it does, just because, we've seen lots of crazy things from this team already. That would just be one more,
Yeah, well, we've seen guys out, too, and it sometimes has mattered, sometimes it hasn't mattered. But I don't know what the expectation is today. My expectation is Markkanen is not playing tonight. Is that what you're hearing, too?
Markkanen is out tonight, yeah.
So, Lowry's a big part of that, and when they've had success, well, even
again, this is weird because he goes for 40 the other night against Portland and they lose. So who knows what happens, but not having him and Clarkson in the lineup feels a little problematic on the offensive end.
Yeah, and Colin Sexton as well, right? And so they'll be missing all three of those guys yet again tonight. Jordan's finger is still not in a place where he can play. Lowry got banged up multiple times, you know, the other night, and said, like, to the point that he wound up having an X-ray on his wrist after the game, and, you know, noted that, hey, the X-ray came back looking okay, there was no breaks or anything, but he definitely was sore and was unsure about his status. You know, they did wind up beating Sacramento without those guys, because you had, you know, Ochai Agbaji stepping up and scoring a career high. So, like, it's theoretically possible that, you know, you can replace that much offense. But again, to me, it just seems improbable that, you know, that it's going to happen multiple times, right? Like, you just can't replace Lauri Markkanen, who's a given 25 to 30 point scorer on a night-to-night basis. You can't replace Jordan Clarkson. You can't replace Colin Sexton, all of them, you know, more than a few times. Like, they just don't have the personnel to do it. Like, can THT go off sometimes? Yeah. Can Ochai go off at times? Yeah. Can Kelly Olynyk get hot and make, you know, 6 3-pointers in a game? Sure, it's possible. But it just is asking a lot of this team to be able to compete against, you know, a team like Milwaukee tonight, who, yes, they'll be missing a couple players themselves, but, you know, when they've got Giannis out there playing, you expect them to be favored in a game. And so I think that's the case. I think, you know, it's just going to be difficult for the Jazz to put up enough points tonight against the Bucks, especially given what a good defensive team the Bucks are. And then we'll have to see who's available going forward. You know, we're getting to talk to Colin Sexton tonight, pregame, kind of getting an update on what his status is with the hamstring. And we'll see what the future holds for this team over the next 10 games. But, yeah, it's with those guys missing the games they have been, it just becomes difficult to kind of keep up that level of performance.
Who's helped their stock in your mind over the last couple of weeks dealing with all these injuries? You know, it's been kind of a chance for some of the young guys to really make an impression or get on the radar screen moving forward for next year. Who's helped their stock over the last couple of weeks?
Well, so, I mean, Ochai had good stock anyway, but, you know, they already considered him, you know, a big piece going forward. But that said, it's been interesting to see him kind of expand his game to the degree he has, right? Like, Will Hardy kind of referenced it a week or two ago, saying that, like, the both the good and bad thing about Ochai is that he's such a nice kid and such a people-pleasing person. And, you know, you generally love that, but sometimes as a player, you need to have that ability to say, I know this is what the coaches want me to do. They want me to do this thing, but I've recognized that it would be better if I go and do this thing. He wants him to actually, like, color outside the lines sometimes, if you will. And we've seen him increasingly start to do that. Maybe a more unconventional answer is Talen Horton Tucker, yeah, who for most of the season, you know, like early on, like he was not a given to play every night, right? Like there were nights where he was a DNP CD, where he was supplanted in the rotation by Nickeil Alexander-Walker because they had this experiment to play him at point guard full time, and it's not been a natural thing for him. He's never been a full time point guard before, and to see him like really kind of pick up some of the nuances of the position has been intriguing to watch. You know, it's made me far more convinced that, you know, he theoretically could be a long-term piece for this team. I don't know that we're quite there yet in terms of like guaranteeing it, but, you know, given that we not only have the nights where he's scoring 37, but that he's increasingly had kind of, you know, 6, 7, 8 assist games, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the nights also where he's not having 5 turnovers, right? That was a huge problem earlier on, especially as his role increased with Colin Sexton going out and with Mike Conley traded. Just because, again, like these on-court reads are not the most natural thing to him. So the amount of time he's been spending behind the scenes, learning the scheme, watching film with coaches, and really just trying to kind of adapt to that position, it feels like he's making big strides.
What do we make of Fontecchio and where he's at? It was kind of an under-the-radar signing when they made it in the offseason. What do you think he's done this year? Is he, you know, they gave him a multi-year, so it's not like he was on a one-year deal, but have you been impressed at all? Is there still to be determined? What's your read on Fontecchio?
I think that with Simone, there definitely was an acclimation period, right, where he just, especially early on, like getting very inconsistent minutes, it's hard to go out there, you know, in three-minute spurts and, like, to make a difference and to justify getting an expanded role, right? And so then they make the trades, they have the injuries, and all of a sudden he's thrown out there with the Wolves and told, hey, let's see what you can do. And, you know, he conceded. Like, he did not handle those initial games very well. You could see he was overthinking it. He was a little overwhelmed on the court at times, just trying to do too much, and the shooting percentage really suffered as a result. And, you know, clearly it's not a great sign when you're brought into the league with your MO being, oh, this guy is an extremely efficient long-range shooter, and then he's shooting 31% from deep. You know, that doesn't bode well for his future. Over these last few weeks, it seems like he really has kind of settled down and kind of found his groove to some degree. You know, he's found his niche. He's found spots where he can, you know, where he knows what he can do on the court, where he has some level of comfort with the guys who he's playing with. And we've seen the three-point shooting steadily rise as a result. I would like to see him do a little bit more off the ball than what he has shown to this point. You know, if he can be more effective at cutting, at you know, with his movement, opening up lanes for other guys, that would be a big help. If he can utilize his athleticism to become a little bit better of a rebounder, that would help. And, you know, if he can turn into a little bit more of a consistent defender, we've seen nights where he definitely has that capability, you know, in being an off-ball help defender and, you know, making himself useful and effective that way. So he's got that capacity, but it's been a little inconsistent. So I think if we see those things from him, and if, you know, the shooting continues more or less at the rate that it is, I think they're very much happy to have him under contract next season for the deal they do. And, you know, we'll evaluate his progress beyond that.
We're talking to our friend Eric Walden of the Salt Lake Tribune. He'll be covering the Jazz and the Bucks downtown tonight for the Trib as they hit the kind of the stretch run of the season here. The Jazz are making a real push with comic books for both Walker Kessler and Lauri Markkanen to be named kind of all team, the Finisher and the Sheriff. The Sheriff was new to me. I'm not maybe as plugged in as you are. I hadn't heard the Sheriff, but that's what they're going with, and I appreciate that. I don't think either will be first team. I think Walker Kessler will probably be a first team all rookie, perhaps. Won't be rookie of the year. And I don't think Lauri Markkanen's a first team all NBA, maybe a third team. What's your read on those two guys and where they may end up finishing in the awards? And are you a comic book fan?
You know, I'm not really a comic book fan.
Me
my
either.
Son is. Yeah, it's never been my thing. I thought it was interesting that they went back to the comic book route. Some of the beat writers, and I think James was on the call as well yesterday. We got on a Zoom with you know, the Jazz PR staff yesterday, in which they kind of gave us a heads up that this awards campaign was happening and kind of took us through it. Yeah, I'm with you on the Sheriff one, right? Like, I think I heard at one point, maybe early in the season, where Walker had a good game and someone was like, oh, he's the new Sheriff in town or something. I did not think it was enough of a thing to, like, theme a comic book around the premise, but whatever, right? They did do a comic book type campaign a few years ago, I want to say for Jordan Clarkson, and touting maybe Royce O'Neal for all defensive team or something. But those wound up not being printed because the pandemic happened. So they were very excited to put these out. Anyway, be that as it may, Walker, I think he's got a chance to finish as high as second in Rookie of the Year voting. I do think Paolo Banchero is going to win it pretty comfortably. I think Walker could finish anywhere between second and fourth. You know, he'll be in there with Mathurin from the Pacers and one of the Jalen Williamses of the Thunder, the shorter one. I forget what his nickname is. So second through fourth for Walker in Rookie of the Year voting. Lowry, that's an interesting one. I think based on his level of play, you could make a case for him being as high as All-NBA second team. I think that's probably unlikely to happen. I think third team should be a distinct possibility. And the other thing that they're pushing him for is most improved player. And it's my understanding that he has an excellent shot to win that. It sounds like, from the few people I've talked to, it seems like it'll either be him or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Thunder. Obviously, Shai's been incredible this year, but some people will, you know, because Ja Morant won it last year, I think some people might be disinclined to vote for Shai this year because there's the argument that, hey, these guys who are like already on this star level, you know, going bumping up your scoring average 5 or 6 a game, like, okay, cool, but like you're expected to be an awesome player and now you're just like slightly more awesome. Whereas with a guy like Lowry, absolutely nobody saw this level of play this consistently coming this season. So in my view, Lowry absolutely deserves it, and I think he's got a good chance. He'll definitely be top two in that.
Yeah, and I think he'll probably end up, if he's on an all-NBA team, it'll be third. I don't think there's any doubt Walker will be on the all-rookie team, probably, like you said, voting somewhere between second and fourth or fifth. But it's a good year for both those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the Jazz front office, frustrated as they might be by the unexpected success of the team and their inability to, you know, absolutely generate a high lottery pick, I think, you know, that disappointment will be tempered somewhat by knowing that Lowry and Walker have absolutely been far better players than what they anticipated they would be going forward.
I know it's Andy's vote, not yours, but if you're voting MVP, who's getting your vote?
Ooh, that's a good one. A few weeks ago, I would have definitely said Jokic. I do think that Joel Embiid has maybe played himself back into the competition just with the run the Sixers have had lately, and he's been very, you know, instrumental in that. He's put up some monstrous numbers. I honestly think Giannis has a good case for it as well. Like, I'm really on the fence about those three guys. I think probably my inclination would still be to give it to Jokic. Just the numbers that he's put up all season long have been incredible. You know, I don't think I would take it away from him just because the Nuggets have gone through like a small little blip recently. I still feel like they've been the dominant team in the West for most of the season. And then you look at his overall numbers, and it's just hard to argue against them. The other two guys I do think have a legitimate case in that they play way more defense than he does. So, you know, they're more two-way players than he is. But I don't know, you know, that's a really tough one, and I'm kind of glad it's not me this year. I honestly don't know which way I would go. I'm glad Andy's got it. I'm glad that, you know, the Lowry, Markkanen, and Andy Larson Appreciation Society continues on a nightly basis now that Lowry is aware that Andy has the vote and could potentially put him on one of those all-NBA teams. So that's been a fun thing to watch unfold in the nightly post-game news conferences taking place. But gun to my head, I'm going to say probably Jokic 1 and Embiid 2 right now would be the way I'd go.
Okay, and I still think Giannis has a place in that somewhere. I think those three guys are it. I think you can make a legitimate case for all three of them. I haven't sat down and crunched the numbers yet. I would like to see this thing play out because I think there's something to be said for being the best player on the best team, too, and whether it's Milwaukee or Denver. But I think Embiid, with a late push, could certainly put himself in that conversation, too. I think all three of those guys are worthy candidates.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on that.
What are you expecting tonight before I let you go?
I expect a 40-point game from Joe Ingles.
Really? No, you don't.
No. No. I do expect a nice ovation for Joe. We had a good conversation with him this morning at Bucks Shoot Around, which people can read all about at sltrip.com/jazz. Later this evening, I'll be writing that story up. I expect the Bucks to win tonight. I know they don't have Chris Middleton. I know, you know, they're not playing at full strength either, but you look at the Jazz playing without Lowry, playing without Jordan, playing without Colin, and then really the real killer is playing without Rudy Gay. I just don't see how they can possibly overcome that absence. So I think that's what's ultimately going to doom them, and the Bucks leave Salt Lake City with a win.
Quick thought on Ingles. Since you talked to him today, and I don't want to take too much away from your article, but it felt like last year when the Jazz traded him injured and all to Portland, it seemed like a very logical deal that we all kind of felt was coming. It felt like Joe had some hard feelings or a little bit of animosity toward the organization, at least at that time. Where is he now with the Jazz? Because a lot of the guys he played with are now gone. Coach is gone. Owner's still here. But when you talk to him today, is there a touch of animosity that the Jazz traded him? Where is he with the Jazz?
I think at the time that was absolutely true. I think, you know, when he did come here for that Blazers game and kind of spoke about his feelings and his reaction to it, he was still a little surprised by it. You know, like he acknowledged, like, look, I understand exactly why they did it. I understand the business side. I just am coming from a very emotional place of feeling like this was a place where I could have spent my whole career, where I could have retired. And he just felt like he would have liked to have been given the chance to rehab from the injury and have them, you know, bring him back. Obviously, with the way this last summer unfolded, you know, with the team being deconstructed, he now very much is in a very different place. You know, and the year being a year out from that helps as well. You know, he went out of his way to mention that he's got no hard feelings about the trade anymore. He's come to terms with it. He would have loved to retire here, but absolutely understands why the Jazz did what they did. And now, you know, it certainly helps that he's wound up in a place that he enjoys. He very much enjoys, you know, his teammates on the Bucks. He enjoys that they are competing for a championship and, you know, that he's playing well for them. Like he got off to a rough start in his, you know, first few games back rehabbing from the injury, but he's very much become, you know, an integral part of that team. And so I think he's in a much better headspace now than he was when I talked to him a year ago.
Read that piece later tonight at sltrib.com and read Eric's game story as well. Thanks, Eric. Have a good weekend, man.
All right. Take care, Bill.
There you go, Eric Walden.